This podcast contains strong language and adult themes from the outset. Can you believe that on Saturday night we saw the return of
The Wall?
I cannot believe it. I had so many messages from people saying, I am so excited that The Wall is back.
Danny is back. Danny's back on our screens with The Wall. We're in for a good ride, I reckon, with old Danny.
We are in for a good ride. And I'm sure we will be able to pick up some other classic moments.
Oh, I think we're going to get some gems. We're going to get some more gems from Danny and his Cockney accent. And
exactly.
The Wall.
The Wall.
Did you actually? I didn't actually watch it on Saturday, though, did you?
No, I didn't. No. I didn't watch it. It's going to be difficult, isn't it? Because it's going to clash with Saturday Night Takeaway, probably.
Yeah. Did you watch that on Saturday?
I didn't. We started it and then we had to pop out and get milk. And then by the time I got back and yada, yada, yada. But I will catch up with it. I will watch it.
Honestly, it was. They have managed to put that show together so brilliantly, I think, given you know, the fact that you can't have a live audience and they've got to be
They had a virtual
careful.
Audience, didn't they?
They had a virtual audience. It was V, I thought.
It was V-Pats.
Mm. It was V-Pats. Were your V-Pats.
Well, this last episode last week, we created a real buzz, I feel, specifically around Kendall's vagina.
Specifically around Vaginagate. Yeah. Vag.
But interestingly, I had quite a funny message, I thought, from someone called Faye on Instagram. Mm. And this is what she said. She said, "Hi, Ruth. First off, absolutely loving the podcast. I love all the segments. My husband is now a fan and he regularly quotes things like getting on my shitting tits and that is dickish behaviour. I listened to the new one this morning. Fantastically honest bit about marriage at the end, by the way. But vagina? Where is her vagina? Up inside her body was all I could think. Here's a backstory for you. Just this past week, I've been having a WhatsApp discussion with some friends about what they call the front bottom for their children.
Right.
Turns out I'm the vagina police. A term they have used to describe my unusual annoyance at people using the term vagina when they mean vulva.
She needs to relax.
Have you had any other messages from fellow vagina police, or am I just the only one out there, Faye? You're the only one, Faye.
Yes, you absolutely are. And I'm quite shocked at your depth of wanting to be specific about what you're talking about regarding vagina. Yeah. As far as I'm concerned, it's just one thing. It's your vagina. You know, you don't need to be separating everything out to your vulva, to your clitoris, to your uterus, to your fallopian, you know, it's just the whole thing's just your vag. That's it.
I love the fact that she put, where is her vagina? Up inside her body. It's like a thing.
Yeah, I mean, Faye is quite obsessed with
obsessed.
Being. Yeah. 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 I have never known anyone like Faye, I don't think.
But we had so many, we've chatted, haven't we? We both had so many messages.
Yeah.
I had people messaging me saying, I can't believe you zoomed in on Kendall's vag.
This is important stuff, guys. Okay?
It is important stuff.
That we kind of recognise this and we then are able to chat about it and debrief.
Yes.
I think. And there,
but lots of you found it very funny.
This episode, definitely, I felt like, this was the most interaction I think I've had with our OGs, with our listeners on an episode.
I agree.
Because there was just like, I had people messaging me going, Ange, I'm with you. I am also a speedy boarder.
Yeah.
You know, it's, yes, you're paying your 16 quid or whatever it is, but you get, you know, you can take on extra hand luggage or you get extra luggage, you know, all the benefits you get of being a speedy boarder, which I was like, great. I'm not the only dick. And then I also had a lot of messages re the fluffy open-toed slippers.
Same, so did I.
Yeah. Which has actually It's making me feel like I'm going to have to do a 180. I got that right there, didn't I?
Oh, no. What, are you going to get some?
Well, you see, the feedback I've got from people is that they're very, like, I get quite hot feet. I don't like hot feet. I get them, especially in the mornings. I'm always really hot in the mornings. I think it's hormones. Okay. I think it's HRT shit. So I'm always really hot in the morning to the point that I'm literally in, obviously, if I'm working out, I'm in workout gear, which is basically like, which is basically just like a vest. Conversation.
No, hang on. This, you are sounding like a class A twat in this conversation. Obviously, guys, if I'm working out, I'll be in my active wear.
I'll be in my active wear.
Getting on the Peloton.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I actually did a great ride this morning with Cody. Yeah.
Oh, God.
30 minute 90s. Yeah. Honestly, Cody is absolutely my favourite Peloton wankery instructor person.
Right.
He is brilliant. Yeah, he's brilliant.
Good to know.
But anyway, I'm always quite hot. My feet get quite, and I hate hot feet. And the feedback I was getting from people is they are brilliant for that because they just give you a bit of warmth, but not with the full on, my feet are on fire, they're sweating, I've got to take socks, slippers off, everything. So I'm thinking I might have to invest in some to really be able to see if actually they are a good investment.
Are you going to get Kim Kardashian's?
No, I'm not spending 85 fucking quid on them. No, no, no. They'll be, I think someone actually gave some good advice on that. They said, look, Ange, because you're new to the fluffy open-toed slipper, go for a sort of cheaper pair initially, see how you go, and then you can, like, apparently white stuff have some very, very lovely ones, but obviously white stuff
well,
prices.
We will wait with bated breath.
I will report. I'll report back, guys. I will purchase a pair and see how my feet feel, and if I've actually become a convert.
Let's do
la big question.
Now, this question this week came in from a fellow Ange.
Hello, fellow Ange.
No E on the end. So there actually, on the end of the rest.
So
of
actually, this
there.
Would, in my opinion, you're an Ang. But anyway,
okay.
Thank you, Ang.
No, sure. And this came in from Facebook, and Ange said, "What sport would be the funniest to add a mandatory amount of alcohol to?" I just think that is a brilliant question.
Such a great question. My first thoughts on this were swimming, and in particular, synchronized swimming.
Oh my God, could you imagine?
You know, I mean, they have to do a lot of in and out of the water, don't they? Legs up, you know, legs up splits, up, out, you know. And I just think if you had a few in there that were, you know, a little bit on the old pissy side, they would be hilarious.
Well, I thought, what about rugby? Can you imagine, like, a load of burly blokes,
couple of beers
in them, three or four beers in the scrum? I mean it would be absolutely hilarious.
It would be, yeah, it would be carnage.
I actually wonder whether it would turn into like an episode of EastEnders or something. Are you looking at me? What's your problem, mate?
I wonder, though, if it would go the other way. Like, they'd all just become a bit, you know, a bit sort of softer, a bit more gentle. But, all right, mate, come on, let's get in the scrum. Let's have a little cuddle down here. You know, that. I think it might go the other way.
There'd be one rugby player who would be a happy drunk and would just be like, come here.
Come here, Jeff. Yeah.
Don't be pushing me out the scrum, mate. Come on. I love you, man.
I think that's how it could go. I think it would have the opposite effect. Yeah, because obviously rugby's quite a, you know, very manly, boisterous sport. And I think if they've all had a few bevs, they probably become quite the opposite.
They become I love you drunks.
Yes. Having a laugh, having a giggle. I love you. You're amazing. Let's have a cuddle. you know, that sort of vibe.
I mean, just to go back to the synchronized swimming, do you remember when we, us three, were at the end time, us three, me, you and James were in a pool together, it always turned into a synchro, didn't it?
Honestly. I mean, some of the performances we have given in a pool.
Unreal.
They are Oscar winning, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we'd get gold at Olympics.
100%, mate. 100%.
Do you remember for A League of Their Own when James did the synchronized swimming?
And he loved it. He
absolutely loved it. If you haven't seen that, our brother hosts a show called A League of Their Own that he used to, that was on Sky. And for part of that, he'd golf and do sports challenges. And he, one particular week, was in a very tight swimming costume. And was in the pool with a load of women who were synchronized swimmers.
Yeah. And obviously had the swimming hat, the nose clip, had the whole shebang. Everything. Bit of makeup on his face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He loved it, didn't he?
Oh my God. He you could tell he was in his element.
Oh yeah, he was having a whale of a time.
Yeah, popping up out of the water and then underneath, and then his legs would come up, then he'd do the splits and he loved it.
I tell you what though, synchronized swimming is quite the thing to watch.
Oh, I love it. I absolutely love watching the synchronized swimming.
Do you?
Yes, I do. One, because it amazes me. I'm like, how the hell do you stay underwater for that long?
I know.
I mean, I think they're probably more like fish than humans. I think they've got some kind of, is it gulls?
Gills. What the hell? I'm sure they've got some kind of gulls going on, like a seagull or something.
Do you know, as soon as I said that, I'm like, that's wrong, but I can't think what the right one is. Yeah, I reckon they have got, little invisible gills in their neck. So when they're under there, they can get oxygen in to keep them down.
What about if you added like a small amount of alcohol to something like shot put? I mean, that could go seriously tits up, couldn't it?
They've got that
great like ball thing in their neck, and they spin and spin and spin and spin and spin. And if they'd had like 5 vodka Red Bulls before the spinning started, that ball would end up anywhere, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that is a very good one. And what about the one? Is it the high jump where they have to use that massive pole to get? Can you imagine them having to run with the pole?
And that would be like, you know, when your best mate decided he was going to, I don't know, frog jump one of the bollards in town after he got pissed up and broke his foot doing it. That's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
They'd start running. They'd try and get over that. They'd be over in an instant, wouldn't they? I mean, it would just all end in carnage. But I think we should put this out there, that we should try it at the next Olympics.
Yeah, I think it could really be very entertaining, that.
It would be hilarious, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Instead just of watering those bottles, it's a bit of vodka. Chuck a bit of that in there.
Just to get them just like, not like leathered.
No, just sort of slightly tipsy.
Yeah, just enough to push them over the edge of it.
Yeah, just to make them a bit wobbly. Bit wobbly.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Very, very, very,
very
good question.
Funny question.
Yeah.
I had a shitting tits this week.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. This has been starting to get on my nerves for quite a while now.
Right. Okay. That's good.
Right. So people who say they dislike cats, that's fine. You know, not everybody likes every animal. That's fine. And then when you say, oh, why do you dislike cats? And they go, oh, I love dogs. I think they're great. But I just find cats a bit scratchy and a bit unpredictable. Okay, no cat has ever mauled someone to death, guys. Like, if any animal is unpredictable, it's like, don't leave your dogs with your babies or your young children because they are unpredictable. But it's cats that get this fucking bad press of being scratchy and unpredictable. No, there's no thing to this, Ange.
Yes,
it's ridiculous. It's annoying. It gets on my tits.
Yeah, no, right. What I think here is, cats, is that on the whole, cats can be just a bit, I suppose they're just a bit sort of dismissive of you, aren't they? They're a bit like, oh, hi, yeah, great, you're home. You know, they don't really give a shit about you.
But that's not the reason that lots of people give. Lots of people, my friend Mel doesn't like cats, can't stand them. And when you ask her why, it's because they're scratchy and unpredictable and you don't know what they're going to do next. Mm. You put a dog in a room with a kid and let the kid whine the dog. Like, nobody, no cat's ever been put to sleep because it killed someone.
No, but I think, again, you can't be saying across the board dogs, because it's predominantly certain breeds of dogs that have that sort of, and also I don't know whether that's
necessarily... any dog that hasn't been it's not a breed, it's any dog that hasn't been well cared for.
Yeah, okay.
Dogs that have been trained by their owners to
be,
because breeds get bad presses, and it's not the dog's fault, it's the breeder's fault, or
yes,
it's the owner's fault.
Yes, yes. So I think that could probably apply to cats and dogs.
People who are like, no, honestly, I can't stand cats. I think they're scratchy. I think they're fucking, they'll go for you. You know, you can stroke them 1 minute, the next minute they're trying to bite you. Yeah, I go back to the point. No cat has ever mauled. I just get annoyed. You know, any poll that goes up on Instagram, do you love dogs or cats? Dogs have always got like 98% of people who love them. And cats are just like, I'm here,
yeah,
in the corner. Just, you know, wishing.
But I think cats like that.
It annoys me.
I think cats like that. I think they like to be known as that sort of don't give a shit sort of animal.
It annoys me. It gets on my tits.
Okay, well, you know, fair enough, Pats. I hear what you're saying. Yeah, okay. That's it.
Yeah.
You've had your rant. So, dickish behaviour. This came from Abby on the gram, and she said, people that hover at the side of the road by a crossing, either cross or fuck off. It's annoying. That message absolutely cracked me up.
Yeah. It's true as well.
It is.
You know, you're in your car, you think, oh, zebra crossing, shit, I better slow down. It's normally, I'm going to put it out there, it's normally like a gang of young people, isn't it?
No, I don't agree with you, no.
Well, most of the time, they're like half chatting, going to cross, not going to cross, like stood by the zebra crossing having a chat, and you don't really, and you're like driving up and you slow down,
yeah,
and you try and make eye contact with them, and they're not
Are
looking
you
at
crossing?
You.
Yeah.
And you're sat in your car thinking, right, seriously, either cross, as Abby said,
yeah,
or fuck off to another part of the pavement, mate.
You've got a lot of pavement to choose from. You don't need to be by the crossing.
Why are you congregating in that square of pavement when you could literally be the other end of the street?
But I actually have an issue just generally with pedestrians. Because I've had it happen.
Wow. I actually just have an issue with people out on
pedestrians,
walks, to be
honest. Just people that are walking when I'm driving. Because I think pedestrians, I think they think you ain't going to run me over. So they just.
You think they've got a bit cocky?
Yes.
Right.
You know, it happened to me a couple of weeks ago. I came round a roundabout. And I was clearly indicating I'm coming up this bit of road. And this man just walked across the road. And I think he was going, yeah, you can't go because I'm crossing the road. And you ain't going to knock me over. And I actually wanted to knock him over.
Guys, we've got her back. Asbo Ange is back. Asbo Ange is back. It's back. Was he at a crossing or was he just in a random piece
of
road?
And that's what I mean, just randomly dicing with their lives. That's what I think they're doing. You know, there was no zebra crossing. So actually, you know, legally, he shouldn't have been crossing the road because I was coming down the road in my vehicle.
So he had no authority to be there.
He was Jackie Weaver in that moment.
He had absolutely no authority to cross that road. None whatsoever.
No. And I sometimes just want to really just rev the engine just to kind of go, yeah, move quick because I will knock you if you don't move. Just a little bump on the thigh. Bang. Oh, sorry about that, Jeff. Maybe you should have
looked. Don't condone that. We do not condone that on this podcast under any circumstances. Just to caveat this, We do not condone a bump on the thigh for anyone whilst they're crossing the road.
I would like to do it, though, sometimes. Obviously not to injure anyone, and just to give them a little... Because I do think
no,
pedestrians, have, like you said, they've gotten cocky when it comes to crossing the road.
There is no excuse for bumping any thighs with anyone in a car or otherwise.
I don't see nothing wrong with anyway, a little bump on the thigh.
I love the fact that you started that in like real cool American vibe and then went into with a little bump on the thighs.
Do you know what I went
that
there?
Was bump on the thighs there by
Henry. Do you know the mode I went into for the end bit?
Alan Partridge.
Yeah, Partridge.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the kind of song Partridge would sing.
That was bump on the thighs. You're up with the Partridge. Next up, news.
Bump on the
do you know one thing that annoys me about like people crossing?
Yeah.
So you get to the crossing and it's the traffic light ones.
Yeah,
and they
yeah.
press the button and then seen mm-hmm. a chance to go
to cross.
So they're like the other side of the road, and you've got a shitting stop because it's on red. Yeah. I'm like,
that is
right
annoying.
In future, mate. Before you don't have to press the button no. at that crossing. You could yeah. look to see if it's clear and just yeah. walk across the road.
Mm.
Like again, it's not like oh, there's a big gate there, so I can't cross unless I press the button to remove the gate in the middle of the road.
You see, again, Pat, I think this comes back to deliberately pedestrians wanting to piss you off.
Right.
It's their
vendetta
way of going,
against us.
I'm going to press the button, but then I'll be able to find a space to cross, and they'll still have to stop. So I think it's just it's cocky pedestrians, whether you're crossing or not.
Have you ever crossed the road and then panicked because there's a car's coming?
or done a little sort of casual walk, shit, run.
Yeah. I love watching people do that. Like casually walking and then the speeding up. Shit, that car's getting closer. Like their legs go like in a cartoon, you know, like they're going to like spin on the other side of the road.
Yeah, I've done that a lot actually. Again, I quite like it because I feel like I'm sort of dicing with death. Slightly.
I did it once when we used to live in a flat years ago and Matthew and I just got together.
Did you fall over or something?
I fell across in the middle of the road. I fell over in the middle of the road. There was an M&S across the road from us and I'd gone to pick and I had a bottle of wine in my hand and it smashed.
That is so funny. I wish I'd
came out
that.
Of M&S and this road had like, so it was a one lane of traffic and then a like a place you could stop in the middle of the road.
An island. Islands in the stream.
And it was fine. From one pavement to the island was fine.
Mm.
And then I thought, I've got enough space to get to the other side of the road. Blatantly didn't. Car comes speeding round the roundabout. I sped up, got my foot caught, shit. Fell over, bottle of wine slid across to the other side of the road. Red wine smashed in the road everywhere.
I so wish that had been caught on some kind of camera.
Yeah. I badly grazed my knee and my wrist, though. Anyway, great message, Abby.
Oh,
you're absolutely right. Yeah. Either cross or fuck off. It's annoying.
Yes. And don't be a cocky pedestrian. Okay, so don't go there for this week is something that we've decided to talk about off the back of our chat last week all about marriage. And during that conversation, Ruth Patty told us about some issues that both her and Matt had experienced in their marriage due to a secret drug addiction that came out. And off the back of that, we had this message from someone on the Facebook page, and she would like to remain anonymous. And this is her message. Ruth, I wanted to say a big thank you for being so brave to discuss your husband taking drugs in the past. I too discovered my husband had a secret drug habit about 18 months ago. It totally took me by surprise, as he's not very sociable. So to find out he was addicted to cocaine totally floored me. I was totally oblivious to it and absolutely devastated. if it hadn't have been for the mood changes, angry outbursts, him staying up most of the night, and all of the money being spent, I would be none the wiser. I felt totally betrayed, and we separated for a good few months as a result of it. It was great to hear you talk about it. It was great to hear you talk about it, though, as apart from James Argent talking about his addiction to cocaine recently, I don't hear many people talking about this awful drug. It opened my eyes to the massive drug problem our country has, as soon as I realised so many people were casually taking cocaine. I just hope people realise that these drugs can take a grip of you and truly destroy you and your family. I'm pleased to say my husband now has his life back on track after getting professional support. We are back together and are taking one day at a time. I still have a lot of trust issues as a result, and that is something we have to build on day by day. And yes, I think we would benefit now from couples counselling. We both live with the shame of it too, so thank you. I already feel better writing this to you tonight. Keep going with your podcasts. They brighten my day. So that was obviously a really difficult message, I imagine, for this person to send. And so we decided that maybe this was something we should talk about because it probably doesn't get talked about very often. And obviously with your sort of first-hand experience of this, Petty, we thought it would be good to tackle. So, like we kind of did with the menopause chat, I've got some little questions for you so you can tell us about what happened. So my first one was, like, how did you find out about sort of Matt's drug addiction?
Yeah, just to say at the beginning of this, I've obviously told Matthew that I'm going to be talking about this, and he's totally happy, and we share our story quite publicly, and he feels comfortable with sharing this. So Matthew's had an on and off drug addiction. He started smoking cannabis when he was 13. That's quite young, but quite a gateway drug. Cannabis can often be where it starts. And in the early days of our relationship, so we got together in 2010, and in February, March 2011, I had a suspicion that he was using cocaine, and he actually came in one night and he had some around his mouth, and I put it on my gum and my gum went numb. But he argued with me. I mean, this is the thing with addicts. They will argue, you know, you could tell them the sky was blue and they'd tell you it was green to get the substance that they need and what they want. And they will lie and argue with you, you know, till the cows come home, really. So we had, there was a few in the early days, and I was very clear with him that I really didn't like drugs, and you know, I really wanted him to sort of address these issues. And then slowly as time went on, I thought he'd address them. I probably knew deep down that something was going on. Anyway, we got married in 2012, and he was relatively well at that time. And Matthew will be celebrating 5 years clean September of this year.
Amazing.
And he's like a different person. It's like getting clean has totally transformed his life, really. So it was nearly 5 years ago, four and a half years ago, that it came out. And I came home one day, and we used to live in a flat, and our post would often be left for us outside our front door. And I picked up what I thought was a bank statement for both of us, and I opened it and it said, "We're pleased to agree your £4,000 overdraft." And I was like, what the hell? Like, I sort of deal with all the kind of banking stuff. And I was like, we haven't applied for an overdraft. And I kept reading it and reading it. And then I looked at the top and I realized it was addressed only to Matthew and that it was for a bank account that I didn't even know existed.
Right.
And I sort of knew at that point, okay, this must be drugs because of the kind of conversations we'd had early on in our relationship. Anyway, he tried to argue with me for about 45 minutes to an hour that it wasn't drugs, and he didn't know about this bank account, and he didn't know why there was an overdraft being. And he eventually said, okay, yes, I'll come clean. I'll be honest with you. And it's really interesting in those moments because you almost feel like you're going crazy. Addicts can be so believable, and probably to outsiders listening, they sort of think, you know, that's stupid, you must have known it, you know. But they have a very, you know, they become very good very quickly at knowing how to hide things, knowing how to make up lies. You know, Matthew had got advances on his wages that I didn't know about, and he'd come up with the most elaborate stories when he got paid. If his money was down, he'd come up with the most elaborate, and they were so elaborate that you sort of think, well, that must be true.
Yeah.
Because there ain't no way you'd go making that up. So, yeah, I opened some posts, but it had been there probably since the beginning in much lower levels. It ramped up massively just before it sort of came out. He was taking cannabis and cocaine in his car on his own. And he tells a really sad story, actually, of the sort of final time that he did cocaine. He was in his car by himself and he was bawling his eyes out. And he just said to himself, this is always going to be part of my life. I'm never going to be free of this drug. And he was really crying. And I think there's something quite dark in that. You know, cocaine is a party drug, but a little bit like the person that messaged us, when you find out that somebody's doing that by themselves, you know, they've got a real problem.
Real problem, yeah.
So, yeah, it came out about 4.5 years ago, and that's how I figured out what was going on.
And, you know, obviously you're going to have to kind of go back to those, you know, days, weeks, months.
Yeah.
But how did that affect, like, you on a, you know, as a person, but also you together as a couple and your marriage? Like, how did all of that coming out impact you both?
So I said to Matthew, you're a drug addict. And he was like, I'm not, you know. And I think we have this belief in this country, or we formulate this vision in our head of people who are drug addicts, that, you know, they're homeless, or they've got no money, or they're robbing off of old ladies. And I said, no, that's not just what drug addiction is, Matthew. Drug addiction is when you will put drugs above anything else, even your friends and family. And I said, you might not have robbed old ladies in the street, but you sure as hell robbed off of us, you know, to feed this stupid habit.
Yeah.
You know, you're an addict. And the night that it came out, I couldn't even sleep in our bed. I slept downstairs on the sofa, and he kept saying, you can have the bed, I'll sleep down here. And it was almost, the betrayal runs so deep. Like, you feel so stupid, and you feel like, God, how didn't I see the signs? How didn't I know he was getting off his head on cocaine? And like, you sort of blame yourself a little bit. Anyway, the kind of the next day, I didn't go into work, obviously, neither did he, and we were both at home. And it was sort of about, maybe sort of, it came out on a Monday evening, and it was like the Tuesday afternoon that it sort of hit me. And I'll never forget, like, bawling my eyes out in our flat. And I was just saying to Matthew, just call my sister, just call my sister, just call my sister. And there was just this, like, deep sense of shame, I suppose. And, like, God, I can't believe he sort of brought this to us. You know, before I met Matthew, I wouldn't have even, like, known how to buy drugs. I wouldn't have even known who to approach to. And the days and week, I found a brilliant charity called Drug Fam. They are absolutely fantastic. They have a helpline that you can phone, and they specifically exist for the family of drug addicts, and they do virtual support groups. They have a helpline, and if you are currently trying to, like, sift your way through a family member that is addicted, I can't recommend them enough. And it was, and, you know, we had lots and lots of very, very difficult conversations. I often say to Matthew, if we hadn't have been married, I don't know if I'd have stuck around. That sort of extra layer of marriage for me meant I was sort of determined for us to pull through it. Matthew actually went to Narcotics Anonymous. That's how he got clean. And then after that, he went on to have psychotherapy, but in the early days it was NA that really, really saved Matthew's life. And I went to the very first meeting with him, and he came out and he said, well, yeah, I'm a drug addict. Because what it did was, he heard other people's stories, and NA say look for the similarities, not the differences. And he saw and heard the stories of people who might have taken different substances, might have done it in for different, you know, that might have got them in different ways, but the fundamental underlying reasons as to why people become addicted are often quite similar. Anyway, I phoned this organization called Drug Fam, and this guy that I spoke to gave me some amazing advice. I put a tracker on Matthew's phone. Again, sounds very, very invasive. But I remember saying to this guy from this helpline, I'm his wife, not his babysitter. How the hell am I going to ever trust him again?
Yeah.
And he said, well, lots of couples find it helpful if you put a tracker on your partner's phone. And that transformed my ability to be able to let him, because I had to also make a decision that if I was going to stay in this, I couldn't forever bring it up all the time. You know, I had to make a decision that I was going to work through it too. And I took his cash card off of him. He didn't have his cash card for nearly a year. And he had to, I remember the first year it all came out in the September. That Christmas, he went shopping with his cash card, but with one of our closest friends so that he could go and buy presents.
Mm-hmm.
He had to give me receipts for everything.
Yeah.
Matthew had spent ages pretending he was getting petrol when really, and he'd say, oh, the chip and pin machine wasn't working at the petrol station, so I had to go and get cash out.
Mm.
And that would be his way that he'd then go and use drugs. So he didn't have his cash card. And I basically said to him, he changed his mobile number. He didn't see his friends for a really long time because they were, you know, partly part of the problem. And I said to him, you can't have a foot in both camps. It's either all me or all that. And this is your decision. And I'm really grateful. And as is Matthew now, if you spoke to him, he would say he's so grateful for the love and support that he got from people around him.
Mm.
It's the best thing he ever did was, you know, giving up drugs.
Yeah, and I mean that was going to be my kind of final question was like how are you both doing now? How is life for you together, but also for Matt, and you know, the kind of shift that's had to happen in order to kind of keep your marriage and keep you? How is life 5 years on?
Well, I watched Matthew. I think you'd probably agree with this as well, Ange. I watched Matthew transform into somebody completely different.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Be able to kind of weather life storms better. A new sort of level of, Matthew's always been very introverted, but a new sort of level of kind of confidence and self-belief. And you know, I've sat in so many NA meetings and people have shared that they'd be putting their shoes on and they'd burst into tears because they couldn't decide what shoes to wear. And they would, you know, addicts will say things like, these are the type of feelings I didn't want to sit with. This is the whole reason why I turn to drugs, because I don't. And often when you're in an NA meeting, they'll be like, this is like normal shit that everyday people feel all the time. And I don't know how to deal with this. And the escapism and the numbness of drugs is such a pull for people who have never sat and dealt with perhaps past hurts or griefs or difficulties. Mm. And I cannot tell you how much NA transformed Matthew's life. He went to, they say you should do, in your first 90 days, you should do 90 meetings. So you should go every day. And he went to 85 out of 90 meetings. Mm. He was so committed. Mm. A few years ago, a bit of overhanging debt came out from his drugs. And he said, I've got to go to a meeting tonight. He knew that he had to go and sit with people who knew what it felt like. And he had to share what had happened. He was so disappointed and sad that, you know, all these years on it was rearing its ugly head. We still have the tracker on our phones, but I only ever check it if I'm thinking, should I put the jack of potatoes in because he's going to be home in a bit, or should I? It's really there for ease now rather than a kind of security. He's obviously got his cash card back, and it's interesting because there are sometimes times when something will happen. He was going to this particular place and it was all legit, but he was near to where we live, he kept having to kind of go and drop some work stuff off or do something. And I said to him, why are you always going back to that like town or that village? Like, it's nothing dodgy, is it? Because there will always be this curiosity about Matthew's behavior for me. And there will always be this sort of over sensitive and over alert. God, is that really what you're doing?
Yeah.
But I think nearly 5 years on, Matthew is so proud of his drugs journey. He's so proud of how many days he's racked up clean under his belt. I just can't imagine him giving that
going
up
back
for what he's got now. He says himself, it coming out, it didn't feel like it's the time, but it's the best thing that ever happened to me and to us. And I think when you get nearly 5 years on, and I think what he also knows is he knows his triggers, he knows what is difficult for him, and he knows when he's got to get back into a meeting. And he will, at sporadic points, say, I'm going to go to a meeting tonight. I just feel like I need to go, and I need to just remind myself of what those dark days were like. But honestly, it's made us a better couple. It's made us stronger. Obviously, I wouldn't wish it upon anyone, but the change that has come for Matthew has been amazing, really.
Yeah, and definitely for me to kind of, you know, be your sister and be part of what happened to you and Matt. And I I take my hats off to both of you, because I think there must have been so many times for you, especially, I think, where you just thought, what the hell am I doing? Like, why am I sticking around? Why am I trying to help him? Why am I, you know, that kind of feeling of, should I just get out now? You know?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, this kind of feeds back into the conversation about marriage that we had last week, in that, you know, marriages, long-term relationships will always have these moments that kind of can go one of two ways. You know, either it's this, I've got to get out, this is not working for whatever reason, or there's been some sort of betrayal of trust. And but sometimes actually really sort of digging deep and trying to solve some stuff together, however hard it might be, and however long it might take, sometimes you end up coming out of it just in a far better place, and you become better people, and you rebuild those elements of trust and doubt that have built up for whatever reason. And I just, you know, I just think you and Matt have done just amazing to kind of come through it and come out the other side and still be just the bloody wonderful people that you are.
It's really interesting as well, you know, because there wasn't a part of me ever that wanted to separate from Matthew, which sounds weird, but I knew if we separated, that would push him over the edge.
Yeah, yeah, that and would be the end
for
him.
It could have, I think, potentially killed him, because he would have just gone on a bender. And actually, the thought of him leaving our flat, or me leaving our flat, and him being on his own, I knew what he needed was somebody that said, I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah.
People may have deserted you in your life before. You may not feel like you have, you know, somebody that you feel really strongly attached to. I hate this. I hate what you've done to us, but I love you. And I love you enough to say, I'm in this for the long haul. And don't take that as everything's rosy. And I think the other thing that Drug Fam said to me that was really helpful was, because I kept saying to this guy on the phone, and I phoned the helpline a really good few times, and I said, what if he does it again? What if he does it again? And he said, there will be an end of your rope.
Yeah.
You there'll be a point where you walk away. And if he's prepared to dance with that, that will happen sooner than he thinks. And I said that to Matthew. I said, if you continue to use drugs, there is going to come a point where I will say, enough, I can't do this anymore. Yeah. And if you want to dance with that, and you want to give that a go, and you want to see when the end of my rope is, okay, go ahead. And I think there was a sort of stark reality in that for Matthew that said, okay, she's sticking around, but that doesn't mean she's always going to be there if I mess up again. And also, I couldn't sort of believe his commitment to his recovery. And I think he was so committed to his recovery. He was so absolutely in it with both feet. And then he has been in psychotherapy for a really long time now, since probably for nearly a year, or over a year maybe. But, you know, he's been so committed. He hasn't wavered. And I think for me, there's a sense of, he's wanted this for a really long time. He didn't want to be addicted to drugs. He didn't. I think most addicts want out. I think they hate the drugs that they use. And but yeah, it was a very dark, bleak, very difficult time. But it has strengthened us more than I think, you know, that and infertility, I think, are the two things that have strengthened us more than anything, really. So,
well, thank you so much, Pats, for sharing more of your story, and thanks, Matt, for being happy for us to talk about it today. And obviously, for anyone who is going through anything like this, whether it's, you know, someone you're married to, or someone in your family, and or someone you care about that you know is really struggling, there are obviously lots of places you can go for help. That the place that you said about, Pats, what's that? Drug Fam.
Yeah, they've got a website.
So yeah, you can, and they're obviously, you know, Narcotics Anonymous, and I'm sure there's lots of different.
So there's also Cocaine Anonymous for people who are just addicted to cocaine.
Okay.
So you've got Narcotics Anonymous, Cocaine Anonymous, and then obviously you've got AA as well, Alcoholics Anonymous. They're all very, very fantastic organisations.
So, you know, get help for yourself, or if you want to get help to help someone else, there are lots of things out there. And thank you for listening this week. And we hope you've enjoyed it.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode, and we'll be back next week helping you to find more of the funny.